content of this program is intended for people who are print and visually impaired. Hello, my name is Joe Austin, and I'm your host for today's episode of Legal Matters, an original program produced in the Triangle Radio Reading Service studio. For the next half hour, we'll be exploring topics to champion your legal rights to obtain equal access and full participation in your community for achieving your goals of independent living. Every fourth Tuesday of each month, you can find us here providing news and information from federal and state agencies, as well as nonprofit organizations that promote information on laws supporting independent living. Our presenter today will be me, and I will be assisted by Shay Hargett Hill, who is my longtime producer and engineer for this program. Shay, thank you so much for helping me today.
You are so very welcome. It is my pleasure to be here and having a little speaking role today.
Yes, I'm excited about that too. Have you got anything you would like to tell our audience today?
Absolutely. Now, I've been with you for the last 2 years and we've been doing this. And I'm from New Bern and you've lived there for quite a few years. So I think it'd be a good idea for the audience to get to know you a little bit better. So I'm going to ask you to start by telling us a little bit about you.
Well, thank you, Shay. And yes, when I first started practice, I was with a firm in New Bern, North Carolina, your hometown, and I practiced there for 26 years and then made the move to Raleigh in 2005, and I practice in Raleigh to this day. I do labor and employment law. Just a little bit of background. I'm a double dipper at UNC, go Tar Heels, undergrad at UNC and also law school. Graduated from law school in 1978. Passed the bar that summer and started working in New Bern. From a very early stage in my career, I was actually doing labor and employment law. And about a month into my practice, one of my senior partners by the name of Mike Flanagan, good friend to this day, came to me and said that there were some people in the lobby that had thought they had an age discrimination issue, which is labor and employment law. And he said, a young man has got to start somewhere. So I started doing labor and employment law, you know, within a month of beginning my practice. And it went from case or two to five or six cases to dozen. Well, now it's everything that I do. So I specialize in labor and employment law. It's never a dull moment. I enjoy it very much.
I bet you do.
Yes, I do.
Now, today is, like we said, very special because it's more about you telling us what you want us to know. So tell us what the topic is for today.
We're going to focus today, Shay, on the Family and Medical Leave Act. And that is a very important law. It came into effect in 1993, which is relatively a latecomer in what we call labor and employment law. Labor and employment law has its origins in the early part of the 20th century. The Industrial Revolution had a big impact on our history and on our economics and on our commerce. At that time, though, there was very little regulation of the employer-employee relationship. The at-will relationship between employer-employee was in full flower, which meant that the employer could terminate an employee at will, and the employee had the reciprocal right of quitting at will. Well, of course, that's not really reciprocal. It created quite a disparity in power because the employer could dictate to the employee the terms and conditions of employment, so could impose dangerous employment terms. And so the progressive movement began in the early 20th century and started adding regulations to the employment relationship so that employers could not take advantage of employees to such a great degree. And what we saw in the 1920s and the 1930s were the laws that controlled wages an hour, workers' compensation, and allowed people to organize into unions. And so that was really the first wave of employment law, or labor and employment law. Then in the 60s and 70s, we had a second wave of employment laws, and that had to do with advantaging or leveling the playing field for classes and classifications and categories of employees who had been disadvantaged in years gone by, so that these laws in the 60s and the 70s leveled the playing field for people on the basis of race and sex and national origin and the color of their skin, age, and so on. So that was the second wave. Then in the 1990s, there was a third wave, and this had to do with people who were disabled for short-term or long-term, and leveling the playing field and giving some accommodation to them. And so that's where the Family and Medical Leave Act comes into play. In 1990, we saw the advent of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which we have talked about many, many times on this program. Then in 1993 came the Family and Medical Leave Act, which we really haven't talked about very much and is a very important law. So the Family and Medical Leave Act, what is it all about? The eponymous leave is very important because in years gone by, except for very limited exceptions, if an employee had to stop working, then the employer could terminate that person's employment. What the Family and Medical Leave Act did was protected people who needed to take time off from work. Let me tell you the reasons why employees can take family and medical leave. And it's for the birth of and care for a newborn child. It's for caring for a child who has been adopted or a child who you have taken in for foster care. It is care for the employee's spouse, child, or parent who has a serious health condition. Can be for the employee's own serious health condition that makes the employee unable to perform the essential functions of his or her job. There's also leave for military issues when you've got a family member or a loved one who is in the military and either has a disability as a result of that or has qualifying exigencies that arise when that person has covered active duty. Where I think that is probably very important for our listeners, perhaps, would be when a spouse or a parent or a child is the employee. Because under those circumstances, if the family member has a need, a serious health condition, and needs for the parent or the spouse or the child to help them with that serious health condition, take them to the doctor, take them to the hospital, tend to them while they are perhaps incapacitated at home for some time, then the law allows for the parent or the child or the spouse to take family and medical leave to take care of the affected family member. So very powerful antidote, if you will, to the at-will rule otherwise, and allows for your loved one to take time off from work if you've got a need to a serious health condition that requires, and I'm going to go over the different reasons why someone would need that help at home or at the hospital. So, any questions, Shay? Is that fairly clear?
Yes, that is very clear. I know that a lot of people, listeners, would want that information because you didn't know quite that much about the Family Medical Leave Act and how that started as far as it being able to have that in North Carolina. How does that differ from here than any other place, or is it different?
No, it is a federal law.
Okay.
And now you raise an interesting point. As a matter of fact, in North Carolina, many people do not know that but for the Family and Medical Leave Act and some other exceptions, an employer does not have to give any leave. And some other wrinkles in the law that will be surprising, but a lot of people are surprised that North Carolina law does not require an employer to give any leave whatsoever. Which is to say, in the normal course of things, a person would have to work basically day in, day out, week in, week out, and not get any time off. And so, of course, that's subject to Fair Labor Standards Act and wage and hour laws and things like that. But the instant an employee needs to take off, but for the Family and Medical Leave Act or some other exceptions, the employer could say, well, we no longer need your services. But the Family and Medical Leave Act is an antidote to that.
Okay. So you're saying technically they don't have to give it to them, right?
Unless they qualify for the Family and Medical Leave Act.
Okay.
There are some other exceptions. For example, if you are required to do jury duty, then the employer's got to give you the time off to do jury duty. If you need to go to your child's school for a couple of hours, then the employer has the obligation to give the employee the time off to go to school to take care of school issues. But by and large, there is no right to leave unless it qualifies under the Family and Medical Leave Act. Which it doesn't apply to every employer, and it doesn't apply to every employee. Mm. It has a high employee threshold. In other words, for a private employer, for example, to be subject to the Family and Medical Leave Act, they have to employ 50 people. Mm. That's a high threshold. The other laws that we've talked about in detail in the past, like Title VII, which prohibits discrimination on the basis of race and sex and national origin, color, and religion, that is a 15-employee threshold. The Age Discrimination and Employment Act has a 20-employee threshold. And then the Family and Medical Leave has a 50-employee threshold. So it doesn't apply to all employers, obviously. And then it doesn't apply to all employees of those employers either. You have to pay your dues to be have protection under the Family and Medical Leave Act. You have to have been employed for 12 months by the same employer. In the previous 12-month period, you have to have worked 1,250 hours. And then you have to work in a work site where there are at least 50 employees within a 75-mile radius. So a few hoops that you've got to jump through as an employee to be entitled to the FMLA, but still a good benefit to have. Mm-hmm. So, any questions so far?
Yeah. So, have there been many cases of people suing their bosses for not giving them the FMLA?
Oh, yes. There are a lot of cases, a lot of reported cases on the FMLA. And there's, as you might expect, I mean, we're talking about some complicated requirements there, so mm-hmm. that people sometimes trip up in whether, A, the employer is subject to the FMLA, and B, whether the employee is eligible for FMLA in the first place. So, yeah, there's quite a lot of litigation about that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of reported cases on the subject.
Well, why do you think there are so many reported cases, as a lawyer, why do you think there are so many reported cases of that? Because it's not as clear cut?
I will say that it's actually pretty clear cut. I mean, when you look at the words on the page of the FMLA Act and also the regulations, I mean, they're typically clear as a bell. The problem is it's so doggone complicated. And there are a lot of requirements, sub-requirements, deadlines and things like that that are imposed by the law. So it's easy to trip up in the implementation of the FMLA as well. And so I would say it's clear, but it's complicated. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons why there's a lot of cases.
Okay. And what else more do you have to tell us about the FMLA?
Let's focus. Let's hypothesize, if you will, a situation where FMLA will be something that you would be interested in. And suppose, if my spouse, for example, had a serious health condition, and I'm employed by, an employer that is covered by the FMLA, there may be circumstances where I would have to take my spouse to the doctor, take her to the hospital. There are, any number of situations where this could come up. For example, if spouse or loved one has cancer and has to undergo chemotherapy or some other kind of therapy where there are days on end where your help would be medically reasonable and necessary, then the FMLA gives the employee the right to, of course, apply for and get permission from the employer. Got there's always going to be paperwork and regulations and things to fill out. But then the employee who has the spouse or the child or the parent who is undergoing the therapy or the need for hospitalization gives them the right to take that time off.
Tell me a little bit more about the time frame. So if someone, like you said, if your spouse had cancer, that idea of that can be lengthy, the time-wise, as far as that. How much time are you allotted? And if you use that time up, can you go and get more time? Or
generally speaking, what you get is 12 weeks of leave if you have to take the time week on end. In other words, I like to think of it as 84 days in a row, 84 calendar days in a row, 12 weeks of time off. So that is generally speaking. So you get the 12 weeks in a 12-month period. Now that comes into play to another aspect of the question that you just asked. So that if there is that period of time where there is intensive need for therapy or hospitalization, then the employee can take 12 weeks on end off work. Now, of course, it is not with pay. It is typically unpaid. And so that 12 weeks is not with pay. But if you've got the right to sick pay and vacation pay, then you can apply that to that FMLA time off. That also, it doesn't necessarily have to be the 12 weeks on end. In other words, if the spouse or the child or the parent needs to be taking therapy intermittently, then you can take intermittent leave up to 12 weeks. In other words, it might not be 12 weeks on end. It might be 12 weeks taken in increments. It might be one day per week, and that's called intermittent leave. But if it's medically necessary to take your spouse or your child or your parent to therapy, you know, one day a week, then that would be intermittent leave, and you would be qualified for that as well. And so there are occasions, of course, where it may go on past a 12-month period, in which case it's every 12 months. And if it's an intermittent leave situation, then so long as the person, the employee, stays employed and works 1,250 hours within that 12-month period, notwithstanding the time taken off for the leave, then when it rolls over into the next 12-month period, then it starts all over again. So it can be a very powerful means of maintaining your job and taking care of your loved one.
Mm-hmm. Which is very important in that kind of a situation.
Very important. And let me go down the list of what the serious health conditions might be. And one of which, of course, is inpatient care. In other words, if my spouse or my child or my parent needs to go to the hospital and for an overnight stay, and that may be one night, it may be, you know, weeks on end, then if I otherwise qualify for FMLA, then that is a serious health condition that I can get the time off to do. Then there are situations where there is continuing treatment needed by a health care provider. And usually you're talking about 3 consecutive days, at least 3 consecutive days. So if it's at least 3 consecutive days up to a week, up to 12 weeks, then that's also a serious health condition that you can take FMLA for. Now, the most powerful part of the FMLA, to my mind, though, is the right to reinstatement. In other words, it's called the Family and Medical Leave Act, but it could also be called the Employment Reinstatement Act, because that really is the important thing. It doesn't do you much good to have the time off if the employer doesn't have to take you back. And so the FMLA requires the employer to reinstate, it's called job restoration, requires the employer to restore the employee to the same or equivalent position, so that they have to put you back into your old job or a job that has the same pay, same responsibility, and the same benefits. And so that, to my mind, is the most powerful part of the Family and Medical Leave Act, the job restoration rights.
That makes the most sense, and that's very important to people when they're going through that, to know that they have a job to come back to.
Exactly. That is the job security that you wouldn't otherwise have if you had to take time off. And so the of course, people will sometimes try to manipulate their employer, and it's not unusual for people to try to take family and medical leave during deer hunting season. and so that's one thing that employers are sensitive to and have to watch out for. So, well, Shay, any more questions about the Family and Medical Leave Act?
I think you did a great job of explaining it, and I think our audience will love what you gave the information about.
Well, thank you so much, Shay, and I enjoyed working with you. You were a great interviewer. So
thank you.
But we've run out of time for today's episode of Legal Matters. Please be sure to tune in next time on the fourth Tuesday of every month at 2 p.m. We rebroadcast Wednesday at 7 a.m. And we hope you've enjoyed the show and discovered information about your legal rights for obtaining equal access and full participation in your community. I'm Joe Austin, your host, and I want to thank Shay Hargett Hill again, our producer and engineer. The content of this program is intended for people who are print and visually impaired. After it's broadcast, you can find it as a podcast at our website, www.trianglereadingservice.org, where you'll be able to listen to it again and share it with others. If you have any comments or questions from today's episode or wish to share a topic that you want us to explore, call us please at 919-832-5138, and you can reach us via email at info@trrsnc.org. We look forward to hearing from you, and until next time, thanks so much.